Says Wreck, with a red button next to it.
Let us send our imaginations forward into time, into the years beyond 2000 AD. What strange adventures, what exciting things will we find in the world of tomorrow?
I am a nephew by marriage to that celebrated, brilliant, eccentric German scientist.
Your arm and hands with oversized antenna.
And I must live until I see.
Hello, and welcome to Mind Boggled on this very fine evening. My name's Andrew Katsis.
And I'm Chris Gatto.
And today, we're talking about sex.
And birds, again.
Enough of that from you. And one species of bird in particular, one of my favourites. That's him right there, in fact. To get this discussion going, we've rounded up an expert.
My name is Raoul Mulder. I am a behavioural ecologist. And I work at the University of Melbourne in the Department of Zoology.
He's also my master's supervisor, but let's not worry about that.
I work on a range of different species. My interests are in animal behaviour. I work mainly on birds. About 30 years ago, before the advent of paternity testing, we assumed that 90% of birds were monogamous. We assumed at the time that if two birds were pair bonded, then they would also be socially and genetically faithful to each other.
You see, this is a story about being faithful. Many bird species form breeding partnerships, and depending on the species, these partnerships might last one breeding season, or they might last an entire lifetime.
Well, that's rather sweet, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I guess so.
Well, you sound pretty cynical about it.
No, I'm just saying
well,
that maybe...
Well, I think it's rather lovely that two birds would choose to commit to each other for an entire lifetime.
Yes, and that's what we always thought they were doing. But what were these birds getting up to while our backs were turned? And why was the superb fairy wren the worst offender of all?
So, I started studying fairy wrens during my honours year, just before I started my PhD.
Yeah, so superb fairy wrens have very superb plumage, I guess.
That was Dr. Michelle Hall, another expert.
I'm a researcher at the University of Melbourne, and I study personalities of superb fairy wrens.
Now, Getter, are you familiar with the superb fairy wren?
I am. I actually see them flitting around my garden all the time.
You probably would have. They're common in urban gardens throughout southeastern Australia, and they're easily recognised. They're small birds, no more than, 15 centimetres from head to tail. Females are kind of a drab brown colour, not really all that exciting to look at. But in the breeding season, males, they like to dress up.
Males have probably half or three quarters of their body coloured in a really an almost an iridescent pale blue.
And fairy wrens are interesting because they form cooperative groups.
What does he mean by cooperative groups?
Okay, well, you said you've seen fairy wrens in your backyard. Are they always alone?
Well, actually, no. No, they're always in groups.
Exactly, and in this case, it's a family group. A male and a female fairy wren form a breeding partnership, and together they have chicks. Now the daughters, they always leave ASAP, they get chased away. But the sons, they have a choice. They can disperse into their own territory, or they can hang around and help raise their younger siblings. This is called cooperative breeding.
And is that meant to be unusual?
Well, it is quite unusual. I mean, a few species do it, but we still don't really understand why. And that's why Professor Mulder was quite interested.
I spent a lot of time during that project watching fairy wrens. And I noticed that when I was doing that, during the breeding season, I'd often see males flying around with little bright yellow petals in their bills. I was able to find out where these males came from and who they were doing these displays for. And to my absolute astonishment, I discovered that, almost without exception, males displayed only for females that were paired to other males.
Okay, so here's what's happening here. Males are using these flower petals to flirt, but they're not flirting with their own females. They're flirting with someone else's.
The sneaky little bastards.
That's pretty much it. Professor Mulder concluded from his research that this flower petal display
was an exclusive extra pair display, if you like, a display that seems to evolve for no other purpose than to try to attract other females into mating with those males. So, seeing all of these yellow petal displays made me wonder whether or not the fairy wrens were as faithful as we assumed they were. So I collected blood samples from families of fairy wrens, so from mothers, fathers, and the chicks in their nests, And I was gobsmacked to discover that almost all of the families that I tested had incredibly high rates of what we now call extrapair paternity. So the figure was so high that I was convinced I must be doing something wrong. And I went over and over and over the data again and again to try and work out whether I'd made a mistake somewhere, whether I might have made an error. 75% of all of the offspring were extrapair. Now that's an average, of course.
Whoa, wait. 75%.
75%.
You mean that 3/4 of chicks
were the products of infidelity.
At 75%, the superb fairy wren reigns supreme as the species with the most extreme high rate of extrapair paternity.
But why do they do it?
It's frustrating to admit that after all these years, we still don't have a really good explanation for why rates of extrapair paternity should be so much higher in this species than they are in other species.
So we have no idea, really.
Well, we have theories, Gatto, testable theories, for why a bird might want to cheat on its partner. The first of these is something called the good genes hypothesis.
One of the most interesting ideas that people have wanted to test is whether or not what the female is procuring is good genes for her offspring. That by mating with a male outside the pair bond, the female tries to improve the quality of the offspring that she produces. So for some species, a bird that had been studied in Europe, for example, they found evidence that the offspring of these extrapair fathers survive better and therefore that females might be looking for better genes.
Well, I suppose that makes sense. Not everyone can be paired up with the super fit, attractive alpha male.
The George Clooney, if you will.
But you can still make sure your children are related to him, I suppose, giving them the best chance of survival.
Unfortunately, in the fairy wrens, the story is not so clear cut and we don't find that pattern.
Ah, damn.
Yeah, I know.
There's a different possibility in the fairy wrens, and that is that females might be trying to avoid inbreeding with close relatives.
This is called the inbreeding avoidance hypothesis.
So because of the unusual social system of the fairy wrens, where sons often stay around and help their parents, you can sometimes get a situation where the dominant male in a territory will die, and one of his sons will inherit the breeding position.
So mothers can often end up being paired with their sons.
And that means that a female might sometimes find that she is now partnered with one of her sons rather than an unrelated male.
And typically that results in them leaving. But if there aren't many options for her or for whatever reason she delays her departure, they will sometimes breed together. And in that case...
And in that case, she'll avoid mating with her partner, who is also her son. She'll cheat on him almost every time.
Okay, so there might be a trade-off between being unfaithful and being incestuous. Well, in this case, adultery is the lesser of two evils.
Perhaps. I mean, there's nothing inherently immoral about being unfaithful. To fairy wrens, that's just the way they do things. For whatever reason, in evolutionary terms, it works for them.
So, obviously there's a conflict of male and female interests. Males would probably prefer that females are perfectly faithful to them. I think what happens in the fairy wrens is that the females play an artful game whereby the males are sometimes allowed some copulations so that, particularly in pairs, the male will have fathered some of the offspring but not all of the offspring. That means he has an invidious decision to make. He can either abandon the brood, in which case he might be dooming his own offspring to death, or he can feed offspring that are almost certainly not his, and in the process provide a free lunch to somebody else's offspring.
Well, geez, that's a little mean, isn't it?
Why is it a little mean, Getter?
Well, it sounds to me like the males are being, well, it's entrapment. Most of these chicks belong to another male, but because they can't pick out their own sons, they're stuck looking after all of them.
It does sound like they are getting the sharp end of the stick, I will admit. And this sort of unfaithful behaviour, it isn't limited to fairy wren either. In fact, since the advent of DNA testing in the 1980s,
we have completely flipped our understanding from thinking that 90% of birds are monogamous to now thinking that probably less than 10% of birds are monogamous.
And a very big thank you to Raoul Mulder and Michelle Hall for speaking to us about fairy wrens. They probably would have gone on all day if we hadn't stopped them. But as you know, Gatto, I am myself a disciple of the superb fairy wren, having studied them for the last 2 years.
I do know this, and for everyone out there listening, he's spoken of nothing else for the last 2 bloody years.
Yeah, well, sorry about that. But you'll have to bear with me for a couple of minutes more. While we're on the topic of birds, I wanted to tell you all about my very favourite fairy wren, and how scientific endeavour brought us together. I knew him by 4 letters. Actually, I need some moody music for this. That's better. I knew him by 4 letters. N-S-M-N. Each letter represented one of the coloured ID bands on his legs. N for noir or black, S for silver, M for mauve, and N for black again. He was an adult superb fairy wren. Yep, one of those scandalously adulterous rogues we just talked about. We were catching them as part of a research project with the University of Melbourne. I first met NSMN on April 23, 2012. He was tangled in a mist net, basically a thin mesh that we set up in the hopes that a bird will fly into it. I quickly set to work getting him untangled, usually a simple task. But then... it took us completely by surprise. I tried to lean over the bird to keep him dry, but he got as soaked as I did. The wetter things got, the more difficult it became to maneuver the mesh around his wings and body. Eventually, we had to cut him out with scissors. He was gone, eyes closed, motionless and barely breathing at this stage. But we weren't going to give up so easily. While my colleagues blew hot air over him, I hopped on my field bike and pedaled faster, I reckon, than I ever have in my whole life. I returned with my car and we thrust the wet bird in front of the car heater. He looked dead in my hands, but I kept him there. It took a full half hour, but finally he started to move, slowly at first, and then he began struggling in my hands. He looked ridiculous, with his grey feathers all fluffed up with warm air. I took him outside, sat him down on the ground, and he disappeared before I could even follow him with my eyes. I hoped that he'd be okay. Scientists interfere, it's what we have to do, really. But I didn't want to be responsible for this little guy's fate. Months went by, and NSMN never showed up in our sighting records. I waited, kept checking, and then finally I had to come to terms with the fact that maybe we'd never know for sure if he was still out there. And then, nearly a year later, that's him. This bird is my good mate NSMN. It is 10:15 p.m. a.m. on Monday, February 25, 2013. There are 2 other birds in holding. NSMN lived on to fight another day, to breed, to raise a family, and to commit adultery as many times as he wants.